Morning.
Morning.
I'm sorry I'm late.
No problem. Is Chris joining?
Yeah, I don't know. He said that he wasn't going to join if we
If you
played
played,
D&D.
yeah, did you play D&D?
I had a bow out because my parents were coming over for some social distance visiting. It was a beautiful
Oh.
day, so we set up lawn chairs in the
Yeah.
backyard. My parents bring their masks, and we
Yeah.
all sit about 15 feet apart from each other. But we don't get a chance to see anyone now. So
Yeah.
I tried to push him off to the afternoon, but that wasn't really working for him. So
But on the IMs, did it sound like they did the D&D?
yeah, sorry, I'm getting off topic. N no, they didn't. Martin ended up still being stuck at work, and I'm not sure what else happened, but they ended up not, I don't believe that they played. So that's why I wasn't sure if Chris was going to join or not.
Yeah, I don't. I won't be able to tell because I can't. I still can't see.
Am I showing as that I'm not there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw
Oh,
you as green.
now you're showing green.
Well, that's good.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But I'm not seeing Chris. Do you
No,
see Chris?
I do not see him, no.
So you got to spend some time with your parents?
Little bit, yeah. Yeah, it was
Yeah.
nice. A couple hours.
Yeah, that's good.
We try to call him a couple times a week. Just to, just to chat. It seemed to be like a lot longer chats than we've had in the past. I think
Yeah.
just is stuck indoors. So, yeah. So it was nice.
Good. That's a
Yeah.
good
How
deal.
been?
I've been good. Same thing. I've just been staying here. Haven't seen anybody. But I talk to my parents, but my parents aren't local, like they're not in the area.
Yeah. How often do you talk to them?
Once a week.
Oh, that's nice.
Sometimes twice a week, depending on what's going on.
Yeah. Even with my parents being local, I probably like unless they're coming over for something or to watch the kids, probably only talk to them like once a week or something. But now it's been a little bit more often, I think, because everyone's kind of missing that socialization.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So how
But
have you been?
I've been pretty good. We took me and Stacy decided to take another long weekend. We did one at the very beginning of the month during the time we were supposed to be on the cruise.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be I was supposed to be off for 2 weeks. Instead, we took 2 days off. We took a Friday and a Monday off, and that's what we did this weekend too. So I have tomorrow off still. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing pretty well. I placed that back or that back issue order a while back with Hero for Hire number one and a couple other things that I really was waiting on. And I did that more because like this time of the year we get a lot of things all at the same time. Tax return, usually we get a refund.
Yeah.
I also get a bonus from the end of the previous year. It
Yeah.
usually comes around the same time. So spent a little bit there, but other than that, like I've been telling you, I've bought some stuff from Cowabunga. I've heard Eric quite a few times now. Like the first time I ever heard him talk was on a podcast called My Comic Book History,
Yeah.
and this guy was going around the country to all different comic book stores across the country and kind of talking to them about their experience as a comic book owner. Comic book store owner, and he was on. Thought that was a good conversation, but then all of a sudden I started to hear that he was on like the Mayo Report and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I started on that. Then obviously you had him on.
Yeah.
So, and I've heard you've bought stuff from him before. So I'm like, well, let me reach out because I didn't see anything on like a website to really like look to see what they had, and they didn't have a lot at the time on eBay. So
Yeah.
he's like, yeah. He's like, I'll take a look, see what we have. At that point, I was looking for, I think, Flash and Daredevils. And then I just reached out to him again last week, and I just got a bunch of, what the heck did I just get? Man, now I'm totally losing my mind. Oh, I got a whole bunch. I have fi almost finished my run of Savage She-Hulk, and I put a big dent in Sensational She-Hulk as well.
Yeah,
So I only have.
I think I have a full run of Savage She-Hulk. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
Because
have number
I don't
one.
have it in my database, but I know that at some point I thought I bought a full run off of eBay.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I think I'm missing like maybe four.
Oh, I
If
am missing four. Never mind. I have it in here. I'm missing 22 through 25.
gotcha. Yeah, I'm missing like four random issues now, and I'm missing more from the Sensational just because it's a longer run. But it was.
Sensational, I have all the John Burns. I don't have everything.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, I'm missing a little here and there of that one as well, because anytime I just happen to see something, and a lot of times you can find them, in dollar boxes and stuff, depending, I would pick them up. And then
Yeah.
I bought quite a few, like on my comic shop and stuff like that. But yeah, I kind of thought more about what you were talking about. I haven't listened to your episode yet, but just in terms of like what, maybe we were discussing like in text or whatever. And I thought a little bit about it, and I'm like, I don't mind going and making a small order of comics, like, $30, $40. But yeah, I think that I need to be a little bit more careful as well in terms of going crazy for back issues. Me and Stacy both are working just as you and Barb are,
Yeah, so nothing has really changed.
no, but at the same,
I had a scare, so that's
but you
what
had
kind of.
a specific scare, but the more me and you, like, I can't remember exactly what you wrote, but it made me think, like, yeah, but you kind of hinted at this or whatever, that things could be more delayed for those types of business. Like, we're working, we both are going through, I mean, for me, I'm doing pretty much my normal stuff just at home.
Yeah, same
But when
here.
everything gets back to, if there is a get back to normal, even if it's 6 months from now, they might relook at their organization and be like, well,
Well, there's a bottleneck, is what it
yeah,
is. So
we need to
some
cut
of
back.
society cutting back on something, like suppliers and stuff, it affects everything.
And that's what
So
it starts to make me.
it'll affect some people later, but
That's what I would
I
say.
just at my age, you're still a youngin. I
I am
think
not.
when
I'm what? I'm like 2 years younger.
I don't know, I'm 50 and I am gonna be a little more cautious because as an older person, it might take me longer to find a job.
Oh.
So if something happens, and with the unemployment rate, what it is I want to factor in. So sometimes you get like a severance package, so you get
Yeah.
that severance package, and then when the severance expires, you can get unemployment. And the unemployment, from what I can tell, usually is 6 months. Like you can't go beyond that, but there's some exceptions, right?
Yeah.
If you factor that in, and then plus whatever you have, that's how long you have to get a job.
Yeah, right.
I'm just doing the math, and I'm still spending quite a bit. Like I'm probably still spending more than you. It just
Probably.
means that I'm pocketing a
But
lot
you're
more.
pocketing, right, you're pocketing more
But
money too.
just for a rainy day, just so in case something does happen, which I think there's gonna be another round. Like they say there's not, but I see the writing on the wall. I've been around long enough. This one caught me by surprise. I thought it was going to be a COVID meeting because they schedule these meetings, and it's usually not a good sign when they give you an hour's notice, like all
No.
hands meeting 1 hour. That's usually a bad sign. We had one program manager that would do that for good news and scare the hell out of everybody, but usually that's a bad sign. Like
Yeah.
I've been through it before. They get everybody into a meeting and they're like, this is what's going on, and then you're like, oh shit. And that's what this was. It was like, call in and here's what's going on and you'll be notified and you have to wait for your manager to contact you kind of thing, and then you're like waiting. And but yeah, I don't know. a little eye-opening, and then if you look at the situation, the unemployment rate right now is like it is
It's
freaking
insane.
high. Yeah. And I know things are starting to open up, but I don't know about you, but I'm gonna be if they say everything opens up tomorrow, I'm gonna add a month. In other words, I'm still gonna wear my mask. I'm still gonna I'm still gonna not go to the movies. I'm not gonna I'll go to restaurants, but the same way I do now. Like I'll go get takeout. But
No, I agree with you. I think that it's going to be a very, honestly, I think it's just going to be a very slow process. And I don't see like my, my business, like we're on a main floor that's like a call center where you have all these cubicles of representatives all talking, to their customers side by side. They're not going to be able to do that. I mean, what I'm assuming is that when the all clear finally comes, is they'll probably take some volunteers to come back, spread them out very much, and then maybe like a
Well,
25% office,
that's
whatever.
what smart states are doing. They're doing like a 50,
Right.
like only 50 staff starting in next starting Monday. I think here you could have 50 of your staff at the facility if you
Oh,
had
you can?
zero. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're still, I mean, obviously with it being
But I've
part
been
of it,
looking at
New York City,
the curve math, and I still think it's not like I tend to be more conservative with things like that. And when things are still spiking up and then they're sort of averaging a flat line.
Yeah.
But all it takes is one freaking card game of five people and
You're
those
right.
five people meet with another five people and it's you got a freaking outbreak. I mean
Well, yeah, I mean, our governor does a briefing every late morning, early afternoon, and it looks like New York overall is like on the downward trend, but it's a very slow downward trend. Like
Yeah.
it went up a lot faster than it's going down. But if you look at our county in Western New York, we're still like at that plateau where it like got to a certain level. It's not getting any higher, but the past 4 or 5 days, it's not getting any lower either. It's just like holding steady.
Yeah, and
So
that's
hopefully we'll see it start to drop, but we're not at that
Yeah,
point.
that's why I'm a little cautious because and then we don't know like is this like a common cold? Is it like a flu that's seasonal, you know? We don't know what the hell's happening.
Nobody knows. And as a matter of
But
fact, I was just seeing, they said, I mean, they said right now, there's absolutely no evidence to prove that you just can't get it again.
yo, they know that you can get it again, I think.
So, I mean, what, how does that work
They have
long
people
term?
that have had it and then have gotten it again.
Yeah. I mean, how does this work?
But I think it's like the flu. I mean, you or a cold. You can have a common cold
Yeah.
and then you get over it, right? And then you can get another cold.
Yeah, see,
I
I would have
just
thought
think
maybe a different
I think it's like that. It's just a little more rapid to your system. Like it takes down your immune system faster and then you can't breathe.
Yeah,
So,
like in like viral pneumonia, you can have
yeah.
get over and over again. Oh,
Yeah,
this
so
is fantastic.
but I've been buying stuff like I bought a couple of Aquamans on eBay. And I'm bidding on one right now, Aquaman number 3. So, yeah, and then I got an order from Aaron Myers. You know what I'd like to know is what I don't see. That's what I'd like to know. Is like what he puts out that I don't see.
Yeah. What did you get from Aaron Myers?
I got a comic book called Gore Shriek. I don't know if you know about it, but Gore Shriek is the first comic book that Greg Capullo did.
Oh, you know what? I see. I saw you post that.
Yeah,
That. But
so
otherwise, I would not have known that.
yeah, it's a kind of a key book if you're like into that. I'm into like getting the first book if I can. Like I'll never get that graphics book that Eric Larson did and there's only like five copies in the world. I'll never see that. But when I can get them, And I find that it's a fair price. I go for it. So I got those, and then I got the crossover with Wildstorm and Top Cow. I mean Top Cow and Marvel. It's called Devil's Reign.
I'm not, yeah, I wasn't familiar with that one at
I
all.
didn't used to like the crossovers because I felt like they had a very formulaic plot. You know, like no matter it just like. Hey, this is an exciting event because you got two universes crossing over.
Yeah.
But now I find it like historically fascinating because I don't think it'll ever happen again. So I kind of like it. And I've already read one of them. I read the Silver Surfer Weapon Zero. I got Thor 156, which is I'm trying to get a full run of Thor, so I'm close. And then Green
Wow.
Lantern number 60, same thing. Getting close on filling that run. And then I bought a bunch of cherries, which are
Oh
sort
yeah.
of X-rated Archie
Archie
comics, I guess
style,
you could
right?
say. Yeah. I've
Yeah.
met the guy before. He's really an incredible artist. And I never had anything, so I thought I would get it.
That's
And
cool.
last but not least, Tales to Astonish number 56.
Very
Giant
nice.
Man. Yeah.
So you saw that that sale that Sotheby's is doing for like the entire all of DC every DC comic from like 1935 to 2015?
Yeah, did you bid on
No, but did you know
it?
what they were asking for? Not that I think that at least I would hope that it doesn't go for this low. Now they're the issues aren't necessarily in like perfect, mint condition. I have no idea what condition they're in,
But it's
but
full. Yeah, it's
the
full.
whole thing from 1935 to 2015, they're asking 10 million, which if I had that type of huge amount of money, that would
Yeah.
be a steal. They
That's
have
a that is a
of
steal
these
because
comics.
of the you thinking of just action and detective. I mean, damn.
Well, not only that, but just like the
More
time,
fun.
energy
Oh yeah, it's everything.
to find all of those
It's a
books.
difference if they're I would hope that they have covers like I hope they're
Yeah,
not
I'm
like
sure.
poor condition or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure that they must, but they must show them before, but it was just fascinating to see that some guy actually put this whole thing together and now is selling it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I bought recently for $100, it was a lot, but
Oh.
I didn't want to miss it, was the Detective Comics Walmart thing.
So was it worth your $100?
For me it was, but your mileage may vary. From a new content perspective, definitely not. Like it's a two-faced story, which is sort of cool, but it's not that great.
No.
Well, it's you like Two-Face. It's sort of like
Was the new story the Two-Face story or no?
yeah. The new story was Two-Face. It's sort of like a story of here's where Penguin, Mad Hatter, certain characters that are villains of Batman when Harvey was a district attorney and got away from Harvey. So now like the Harvey personality of Two-Face is going after them.
Interesting.
So that was a
I mean,
Venditti
I would
story.
like it.
Oh,
I don't think
it's a good story. I'm judging it upon the $100. Like,
Right,
but the other ones, I think the package of it was really nice. Like, they had the first appearance, which is Detective Comics 27. I've read that probably three times.
yeah. Yeah, I've read it.
I reread it.
Their selection.
Yeah, that one I've read quite a bit. The Robin the Boy Wonder first appearance, which is Detective 38, which just came out in a facsimile edition.
Yeah, I just read that recently.
Yep. That's a good issue. I like that.
Why is this so expensive?
This? There's not that many out. They really put a low print run on this sucker. It's supply and demand.
Yeah,
It
no,
was one. It was one of
I didn't
those.
realize it was lower than any
It
other
was one.
giant
It was
published.
one of those things where I was like, it'll come back down, it'll come back down, but I was monitoring it like for a long time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't coming back down, it was going up. Like I could have pulled the trigger when it was $20 and I'm like, "No, that's a Walmart book, it'll show up." It never came here. I looked at all the Walmarts. And then it just kept going up. And then I saw less and less of them. I was like, "Damn, what the fuck is going on?" So I got to talking to Aaron Myers. Just on a chat because he has one, and he sold his for like 125 like months and months ago, and he goes, yeah, he doesn't see it coming back down. And so I there was an auction at 125 or 130, and it was one of those or best offer, and I offered him 100 and he took it.
Took
So
it.
I was like, yeah.
Well, I think you probably made out okay. I'm looking at eBay right now. I see three of them. Now, one is graded and signed by Jim Lee, so take that out of
Yeah.
the map. But the other one is they want $295. It comes with a display.
Yeah.
The last one they want $319.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That's what I'm saying. It was like I was watching the Spider-Gwen thing again. I did the same fucking thing with Spider-Gwen, but never had the issue. So my shop at one point had it. And it was like a week after it was out, and he was selling it for $8. And I'm like, fuck that. That thing just came out. I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
And I said, it'll come back down. I told him. Like, dumbass Mike, it never came back down.
Well, I
And
wish I would have known about this back when it was 20, 'cause, and then I would have bought it. But this is crazy.
yeah, it's crazy, and it really is not. Other than it being the 80th anniversary, there's really not anything that hasn't been reprinted in some form.
Yeah, I think I see yours. Did you buy it at the beginning of March, like the mid
Yeah.
March? Yeah,
Yeah.
because I see it says 150 crossed out, best offer accepted.
Yeah. And what came out of that was interesting is I own originals of a couple of them. I own like Detective 359, which is the first Batgirl. I own Detective 457, which is the first appearance of Leslie Tompkins.
I have that one, but I don't have the first back.
And I own 500, which is sort of a tale of multiverse where Phantom Stranger comes down and says, "Hey, I need you guys, Batman and Robin, to stop the murder of the Waynes on an alternate universe," and they go to an alternate universe and save Bruce.
Yeah.
But he still ends up becoming Batman because he becomes super hyper focused because the event happens where it's not Joe Chill, it's somebody else, but is gonna kill his parents. And Batman stops it. Batman and Robin stop it, but he's so his whole attitude changed because that event was like so traumatizing that he kind of went down that same path. And then it had a weird story that I don't think fit, but it was interesting. It was Batman Black and White from 1996, a sort of a very strange monster type story. That one's the one I don't know why it was there, but it did have Nolan artwork, which looked really nice in black and white. I like Kevin Nolan. But the one thing that really stood out for me was rereading. Well, the Leslie Tompkins one is the highlight for me. I love it. I love that story because in this one she looks like Aunt May.
Yes,
In
yes,
her
yes.
first appearance, man, she's old as hell.
Yeah.
And it's just a story where Alfred's like, where does Batman go on this night? He does this every fucking year. Like he
I
goes
remember
out.
this, yeah.
Yeah, he goes out. He doesn't tell me where he's going, but he goes out and he does something. And he basically goes to where his parents were murdered and sees Leslie every year. And it's like a really cool story because Leslie was the first one to like just grab Bruce after his parents were murdered and sort of like kept an eye on him and just held him, and he said, "Hey, it's gonna be all right." And he always remembers that. So like she was gonna get mugged, and he ends up saving. He almost beats the living shit out of the guy. He's like, "Hey, you're fucking with my mom, you know." I'm just gonna kill you right there. But that was the best, one of the best things. And then the Batgirl story, I forgot that it had this really obscure reference. And it's actually historically fascinating that they put this in there. Is Bruce would get from Barbara, because he's filthy rich. Barbara was the librarian, so she could find like rare printings of books for him. Well, she found this book called the Bay Psalm, PSALM, like Psalms. And it had a little editor's note that said in 1947, a perfect copy of it went for like 151,000. And I was like, what the fuck? That's a lot of money for a book in the 40s. This is the 40s. And I was like, 1947, what the hell? How could a book? Well, there's only six in existence. And they're all accounted for. Like, they're all, a lot of them are like at Ivy League schools or some museum or something or another. But it's like a lot of million, it's millions and millions of dollars now.
That's very impressive.
Yeah. If you Google it, Bay of so Bay Psalms, you'll see it, and it's like from the 1600s. That's old. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting factoid.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting, just to go back to that Leslie Tompkins thing. I was, I finally put together like a solid run of Batman from, I don't remember what it is, 260 something up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so instead of reading them as I would get the issues I didn't have, I just waited for me to fill in all of that run, which what like the latest issues years ago when I started doing this, was probably in the, oh God, I don't even know, late, like maybe 390 something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start reading these from that issue, that to whatever, all the way up to like 400. So that's what I did over the past, couple of years.
Yeah.
And I finished. So now I already owned a lot of these issues, like the 359 and stuff, but I didn't have like the first Killer Croc. So I, ended up tracking that down. But anyhow,
That's
reading them,
expensive because it's
yeah.
around the Jason Todd time
It, yeah,
frame.
this first Jason Todd, first Killer
Yeah.
Croc. But it was really interesting to reread a lot of this stuff now, like what, how many years? It's like 30 years later, 35 years
Yeah.
later, because it's like, oh my God, these are all like established characters that I didn't realize at the time when I first read that this wasn't going to be like a one and done character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool
And then
to
you
see
can
what
see how they've sort of morphed over
Yeah,
time.
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
Like
the first.
Leslie. Like Le Leslie pre-crisis and Jason Todd pre-crisis are different than post-crisis. So.
That's, I'm going to talk a little bit about that with one of my comics today,
Yeah.
but it's fascinating to be reading the stuff, and then things like turn on a dime, depending on the series. But I did that the same thing a couple years ago with Infinity Inc. I was missing a bunch of issues like in the early part of the run, and when I filled it all in, I read the whole series, and that was another one where it's like pre-crisis, post-crisis,
Yeah.
and whoa, I mean, I didn't realize it. I think in the moment as I was reading Crisis as it came out, like kind of how much scrambling a lot of creators had to do in their individual books, depending on how much was going on in terms of,
Yeah. When you think
yeah,
about
very.
it, though, it's pretty, it's an organized, it was very organized for how big it was. Like
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it took a lot of coordination to make that
Oh,
happen.
absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, it was an incredible feat.
It was, oh, it absolutely,
It
and
was harder to do it from Crisis than it was for New 52, because New 52, you could sort of, they had loose ground rules. Do you know what I mean? Whereas after Crisis, they had more of a map, like what the rules were.
oh, for
Superman was depowered. You had all this stuff, and with Flashpoint leading to the other one, it was very vague. I mean, you knew that some of the Batman stuff was in continuity, Green Lantern was in continuity, and then a lot of stuff flipped on its side, like Superman.
Yeah, they
And
didn't. They kind of purposely at the time didn't address it because I think, well, they didn't address it with us, I think, because of exactly what you said. I don't think they planned it out necessarily as well. Like
yeah, it
what
wasn't as
it would
coordinated.
be, right?
I mean, it was a coordinated effort to get 52 books out in 1 month and have all the artists and creators switch gears. It just wasn't like this map. I don't think it was like, this is what we're gonna do and this is how it's gonna play out for the next 2, 3 years. I don't think it was as big as Crisis.
No.
I think they had a solid plan for a year, and then they were like, okay, what do we do now?
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
But interesting nonetheless. You've been reading a lot of New 52 stuff. Well, you had
I
been, right?
have. I went on that Aquaman tear, and I don't know. I read about 35 issues of Aquaman, and I loved it. I was surprised because I didn't think I was gonna like Kelly Sue's run as much as I did, and I really like it.
I don't mind it. It's not my preferred
Oh, I loved it because
thing.
he, I think it flowed out of Abnett's really good because he sort of died, and he basically was dead, and those gods brought him back, and I love the eeriness and the creepiness of those gods because
But Mike, where's his
they were
shirt?
like portrayed
Where
as like
is
old.
his shirt?
They gave him the origin of the tattoo too. That is awesome
So these are
because
fresh tattoos. That's why he doesn't want to wear the shirt because it hurts.
it gave him that the or the those gods gave him that tattoo.
Yeah.
So it has to do with like the movie. It was the tattoo that he has in the movie. So I was like, oh, that was pretty damn cool. And then that Robson Rocha or whatever his name is, I just love his art. I think it's like amazing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. So I
Very
like
cool.
got hooked on that. And that's why I became more like you. I was like, I don't want to spend as much, but if I do spend, maybe it should just, you know how I'm all over the place. I'm like, well, maybe it should just be more of a focused assault on a title, like, okay, now my focus is on Aquaman, and then I'll switch to something else. Whatever strikes me at the moment.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Very nice. So, I suppose I can cover something next, huh?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna cover a movie to start out with.
Nice.
The other night we watched, or actually, Stacy didn't watch it. I watched The Hunger from 1983. Have you ever seen this movie?
Is that with David Bowie?
It is.
Yeah, I have watched it.
Yeah. So that was my first time watching it. That was it's one of those that are on that list that I have, that book that I have of 101 movies. And as I mentioned, maybe a week or so ago, kind of been on the vampire kick. So I'm like, well, there's like five or six vampire movies on this list.
Wait, can I ask you a question on vampire movies because it's one of my favorites. Have you watched Shadow of the Vampire yet?
Is that the Willem Dafoe movie?
Yeah.
It is not on this list, but I have watched it and I
Oh
do own it
God,
on DVD.
I freaking love that movie just because
It's
it's
great, isn't
so well, you could tell what I like navigate to. Like I navigate to the ones that like have some historical relevance,
it? Yes.
like Dracula, but they twist it. That's why I like the Netflix one so much. Like it pays respect to what happened before, but then takes it on its own course.
Little
And this one,
twist.
it took this was the twist on Nosferatu, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. I was like, who would have thought of this?
It
He's
was
an actual
fantastic,
vamp.
wasn't it?
Max
Yeah.
Schreck is an actual vampire. I'm like, what the fuck?
I think that was nominated for Best Picture back when it was out that year.
Yeah,
It was really good.
no, it just blew my mind from a concept perspective. It just like, oh my God. And then the acting was like support. You had William Dafoe and what's his name? That played the director.
I can't remember. I just
Malkovich
remember.
was in it, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah. That was I totally agree. That's a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, there's quite a few on there, and obviously I've seen Dracula a bunch of times. I've seen Nosferatu at
I've
least.
seen a lot of them. Like I think I've seen that Vampires movie that you had, in a couple other ones. Because I used to love to see sexy vampire women, and I used to get the VHS tapes back in the day from Blockbuster or rental places.
Yeah. No, it was yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good ones, and there's still a few more. Actually, I think there's two more that I still have to watch. I have to watch the remake of Nosferatu in 1979, which I didn't even know existed until I saw this in the book.
I didn't know that existed either. I only know about the original.
Yeah, so I'll try that, and then Bram Stoker's Dracula from the 90s.
You
So,
haven't
and I've
seen
seen
that?
before. No,
Oh,
I've
you've.
seen it before.
Okay.
But I still want to watch it again because I saw it like in the theater, so I
Yeah,
haven't seen
so
it.
did I. Well, I've seen that one quite a few times, the Gary Oldman one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a
But
good
this one,
Dracula. Yeah,
The
go
Hunger
ahead.
was it, no, that's okay. It was pretty. It was interesting. It was just a different, very different kind of a take with there's a lot of vampire type of things on there, but they never say vampire. It's about this woman played by Catherine. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. It's DeNeuve. She's French. Catherine Deneuve. I'm
That's
probably
close
butchering that.
enough.
And David Bowie. They play Miriam and John, and they're right at the beginning of the movie. They've brought back a man and a woman to party, and so they're drinking, and they start disrobing, and they start having sex, and they don't have any type of like vampire teeth. They have these like little necklaces that are ankhs, like that Egyptian symbol,
Yeah.
and you sh they can what they do is they kind of unclasp that lower part from the ankh, and it's a blade. And so then they slit these people's throats, and they start drinking their blood and stuff. And then you see them afterwards, disposing them in the furnace down in their house. They have this. I don't know exactly where they live. It looks like it might be New York City, but they own like this very big townhouse. Like every floor, it's all part of their home. So in the meantime, Susan Sarandon's also in this movie, and she plays a Sarah, and she's a scientist that along with her boyfriend and of course some others, they're researching kind of like the part that genetics plays in aging. They know that there's certain things that certainly in your environment that can cause you to age faster or slower, but everyone eventually dies, and it's like they're kind of hardwired. They're learning that it's hardwired in your genes that basically you have an internal clock of, when you're born, you hit puberty and then you continue onward and then eventually you die. And so they're trying to unlock that information so they can see what they can do about slowing that clock down so people could live longer. And at this point, they're experimenting, it looks like, with like baboons and stuff. And they've managed, they have a huge breakthrough where they're actually managed to do the reverse and actually speed up the biological clock. And you literally see this poor monkey die and wither away to nothing in the matter of like 2 hours. He basically aged, you know, like it was like something like 90 years and in baboon years there, you know, he was like 130 when he finally died. But it all happened in the space of like 2 hours. So they start unlocking a lot of this information. In the meantime, John, played by David Bowie, he all of a sudden starts noticing that he's starting to age. And after he's had a talk with Miriam, you can tell that Miriam is like the main quote unquote vampire that has turned him into one. And she's, you know, she kind of confesses that she hoped that, you know, this wouldn't happen this time and that she loves him. And, but this has happened over and over and over to her. She takes on a lover and turns them into one of hers, but it never lasts. You get some flashbacks that you can tell that he's been alive at least a couple hundred years, but she's much, much older. As a matter of fact, at one point they do have a very quick, and it's directed by Tony Scott. That's Ridley Scott's brother. It's very stylized in terms of directing, very like, I want to like almost like pretentious to a point, but not terribly so. But it does have a quick flashback of like she's in Egyptian garb at some point, like actually killing somebody. So that's just how ancient she is. Really interesting. But anyhow, so he starts getting a little older and he's like, you know, can't you give me some time? And she's like, there's really nothing I can do. And in the meantime, what had happened is, you know, they've seen this Susan Sarandon's character, Sarah, on TV talking about aging and genetics and stuff like that. And so he goes to see her to try to, you know, get some information. He says that he's aging and that, you know, he's really 30 years old. And he visibly at this point looks like he's probably in his 50s. And he, you know, she thinks that he's just like an absolute kook and says, okay, you know, I just have a meeting. It's going to be 15 minutes. Go wait in the waiting room and I'll be right back to you. She tells security, she's like, you know, he's harmless. I'm sure he's going to walk himself out eventually. You know, just let him sit there. So he sits there and he's waiting. And you can see him actually getting older as he's waiting. And he actually falls asleep. And when he gets woken up by the receptionist, and now he looks like he's in his mid-70s at least. And it's been a couple hours. So he gets up to start leaving. And he's shuffling along, and he happens to see Sarah talking to a colleague, and he approaches her and said, you know, you thought I was crazy. You thought I was a nut. And she's like, oh my God. And she can't believe. And she tries to get him to stay, but he's just, at this point, he's just so upset that he ends up leaving. But earlier she did take some of his information down. So he goes back home and he talks to Miriam some more and says, you know, is there anything that you can do to give me some more time? She's like, no, there's nothing. He's like, well, just release me and, you know, end it. Just kill me. And she's like, you don't understand. When I said you'd live forever, you're going to live forever. She's just going to keep getting older and basically rot. And he's still going to be alive. So, I mean, it's absolutely... That was really cool because it's kind of a flip on, you know, a lot of the vampire romantic, I guess, right? You're young and beautiful forever.
Well, they kind of had that idea with the Netflix version because he was starving. Yeah. He was starving them, so they'd eventually just rot.
Yeah,
they look like the living dead.
Right, but they're not. Yeah. They're and so same type of thing, except for at some point. Just as an aside, they, as you can imagine, with all hundreds of years of time on their hands, you know, they're accomplished musicians at this point, and they were actually teaching a young girl across the street how to play violin, and she would come over once a week and play violin. And so she came over at one point, not on the day that they were supposed to practice, but she just wanted to stop in and say that she couldn't make it the next day. And he's... he's the only one there, and at this and he's not old yet, terribly old. Oh no, he was old. He was old, and he answered the door, and he said that he was just a friend of theirs. And she's like, "Oh, you remind me of John. Are you sure that you're not his father?" And he's like, "No, I'm not." And he has her play the violin, and then he ends up killing her. But it doesn't help him. So in this case, for him at least, once he starts going down this path of deterioration, apparently that it doesn't help bring him back.
Yeah.
So so anyhow, he starts, you know, withering away to, you know, he's very, very old, starts withering away. Marion picks him up, takes him upstairs to the attic where she's prepared a coffin and says, "You know, I love you, John. You know, I'm going to place you in here, and you know, you can, you know, I've got all of my, you know, all the others that I love, you know, to keep you company." And you kind of see, and she's got quite a arrangement of stacks of coffins up in the attic, where you can only imagine, you know, each one of those is a being that's actually still alive in there, just have been rotting away slowly for who knows how many years. So she seals him up, and Sarah comes to the house to try to figure out, you know, to get more information on John. And Miriam says that, you know, he's gone to Europe to try to get more information on his condition. And she ends up inviting her in at one point. And if you remember this movie, there's a very erotic lesbian scene between the two of them.
That's the only thing I remember about it.
I bet you do.
No, I remember the sexuality about the movie.
Yes, yes, very much so. So, you know, eventually...
It's kind of like Cat People.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And you know, sure enough, as you would imagine, you know, she ends up going to turn Sarah into a quote-unquote vampire as well. The next day, you know, Sarah wakes up and she goes, you know, she leaves and she's with her boyfriend and they're ordering dinner and she's starving, but like the food comes and she sends it away. There's just nothing that she wants to eat, even though she feels hungry. So she goes back to see Miriam to find out what exactly is going on. And Miriam kind of explains the situation. And, she kind of, has her stay at her home, for a couple of days, presumably for this whole thing to kind of, finish the process. And then when it's finally come, she's almost like an animal that she's still so hungry. And Miriam brings Sarah's boyfriend over and she kills her own boyfriend. And she comes downstairs and she's mouth is just covered with blood. And she says to her, "Okay, I understand, you know, what's going on now," and so on and so forth. So they start embracing and they start kissing and stuff. And she pulls out Miriam's Ankh and slits Miriam's throat. I guess because she's really upset about this. But Miriam ends up, you know, still getting up, and they chase each other up to the attic. And when she gets it, oh no, I'm sorry. It appears then that she kills Sarah. But when Miriam goes back up to the attic, suddenly all of her former lovers are now out of their caskets and are crowding around her, and they actually push her down the path, you know, off the railing all the way down to the bottom floor, where it appears that she's dead. Now it turns out that Sarah didn't die, probably because she is a vampire at this point. And it cuts kind of to the she's in London at this point, and she's hanging out in the loft there, and all of a sudden you hear like a very muffled voice shouting out Sarah's name, and it kind of pans into the loft, into this like back area that's kind of like gated over. And there's a coffin there that's kind of like banging. And you know that Miriam's in there calling Sarah. So somehow Sarah now is the one in charge. So overall, I thought this was a really interesting movie. I enjoyed watching it. If I have any criticism, it's just that towards the end, some of those plot holes didn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of how did these corpses all manage to suddenly get out of their coffins. And then at the very end, how was it that Miriam was the only one that, I guess, is a true vampire, that she just stays young forever? How did that presumably change that Sarah could then kind of box her up and now has like the upper hand? That none of that's explained. It's just, that's just the end of the movie. But beyond the plot holes, I thought it was a very enjoyable movie.
Cool. Did you watch that on the Amazon Prime or what?
I did. Yes. Yeah.
Was it on that horror movie channel you get?
No, they didn't have it on Shudder. I just watched it on regular Prime. I actually rented it. It was like $3, I think, $2.99.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's what I was gonna do with one of the movies I wanted to watch. I wasn't sure. But I did the same thing you did. I went down the movie path.
Oh, did you? Okay.
We got like a coronavirus free view of they're called like HD channels on DirecTV, and one of them is like Sony HD. And on Sony HD one night, I saw that they were playing sci-fi movies, and I was like, God, I remember these. I want to rewatch them. So I rewatched Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, and I saw this sucker at the theater, and it was 3D at the time, and that's what – I didn't see too many 3D movies at the time, but this was one of them. I remember this one, House of Wax, and Jaws 3D.
Oh, I remember House of Wax.
Yeah, Vincent Price.
Yeah.
So they redid House of Wax for 3D, and then this was made for 3D. And then Jaws 3D. Those are the only 3D ones that I remember. I did watch some 3Ds. They did some 3D movies back in the day on TV where you could like go to the convenience store and pick up 3D glasses and watch 3D movies on your TV. But these were the only ones that I saw at the theater. And I didn't remember too much about this one. And I was like, you know what? I want to rewatch it. And
Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone?
Yeah.
Okay.
It stars Peter Strauss. Molly Ringwald plays a really annoying character, but it works. And Ernie Hudson, you know, from Ghostbusters fame.
Yeah.
Michael Ironside, who's usually a villain. So those are the big names that were in it. It opens up really cool. Like, the plot of this is, like, really good sci-fi. The execution is, they did it with what budget they had. So you have to go in thinking this is a movie of its time.
Sure.
So shift your special effects. And if you look at it in terms of plot, it's pretty amazing. It's it opens up with some rich people that are, they're like touring the sun or getting near a sun, which doesn't sound like a great idea, but you know, they're talking about, oh, you know what? We're seeing more solar flares than normal. And then all of a sudden their device blows up and they're like, oh shit, evacuate, evacuate. And, only one pod gets away, and they're Earthers, and, they get sent to this planet that's ruled by Overdog, and they put out a reward, and that's where Wolf comes in. He's like a scavenger. He's getting like old supplies. He's strip mining like old dead ships and stuff like that. He's like a Han Solo, if you will, I guess. And he gets the alarm saying, oh, there's this many creds for if you can return these Earth girls. And he's like, wow, that's a lot of money. And he's got a ship. He's like kicking and stuff, like the Millennium Falcon. And the thing I really like is he has this sexy robot girl. She's played by Andrea Markovici, and her name is Chalmers. And the thing I love about it is she's sort of like the Build-A-Friend in OMAC. Like, she's hot as hell, and it implies that he has relations with her, but it never says that. So I guess he's perfectly content with what he has purchased. But
Sure, I guess
she
so.
she's really smart. She's like Chewbacca, who's always fixing the Millennium Falcon. She's fi always fixing his ship, and because he's just always kicking it, and she's
Just
fixing
better
it.
looking than Chewbacca.
Yeah, much better looking. And they go to this planet, and they see this, and then you get to like Road Warrior-ish, like this dead world that's infested with disease and mutation and all this kind of stuff. And you see like this cool like steampunk ship. It looks like a battle sh like a pirate ship, and it's running on like railroad tracks. And on the sides of it has like these awesome looking like Road Warrior-ish motorcycles with guns on the side. And they get attacked by these flyers and ground forces because they know they have the three women that escaped. And that's how Space Hunter gets involved. Like, he gets involved, he tries to rescue them, they get away because these like skydivers, they come in and they pick up the girls with hooks and they like fly them off away because they get captured by somebody called the chemist. And the chemist is like this guy that works for Overlord, Overdog, and he just like likes to please him. Like, there's this weird scene where he takes the women over, and they don't show anything because this is a PG movie. But or Michael Ironside's a pretty creepy dude, and he's sitting there, and he's part machine. Like, he's hooked up to these contraptions. He has these arms like with, I don't know, they're big clamps, like clamps that you would use in the wood shop. There, it's like weird looking, and chemist says, "Look what I brought for you!" And these women are screaming and screaming, and he drugs them up, and they're just like there, and he's like, "Take off your clothes," and he's like, "Oh," and he's just sitting there in his chair, and it's just funny. I couldn't stop laughing, but they don't show anything; they just imply it, and then he runs into Ernie Hudson, and who he knows, his name is Washington. And he also runs into Molly Ringwald. She's sort of like a scavenger that she's an earther though, and she talks really weird, high pitched. She's annoying, but I think she's purposely annoying. Like,
Is she annoying because of her voice, or she, or
no,
both
she's
her voice
annoying
and her
because she's
character?
supposed to play like over the top, I
Oh,
think.
okay.
And he sort of forms a relationship with Molly Ringwald as his like sidekick. And eventually him and Ernie Hudson and Molly Ringwald decide to form a team and try to make the rescue and go after Overdog. And he's got like an arena where he like captures people and then makes them go through this weird looking maze. It's pretty cheesy, but the concept is really cool. And if they get out of the maze, he says he'll free you, but he doesn't free you. He absorbs your essence to add life to his. So like Molly Ringwald has to go through that device, and it's really cool because they run into mutants in there. They're like spider mutants that are hanging. They run into these Amazon women that are like underwater. It has like all kinds of crazy aspects of this planet. Very Road Warrior-ish, very like different factions of people and stuff. It
Sounds it.
yeah, I liked it. I liked it more than when I first saw it. That's how much I enjoyed it. I was like, this is just like the plot is like really good. And they do end up making the rescue, and he ends up taking Molly Ringwald to be his partner. And they do rescue the three women and destroy the overdog. So they kind of like make that planet livable again, even though it's insane. But there's some cool Road Warrior-ish vehicles and steampunkish looking things. It's worth a watch if you like
That's
sci-fi.
cool. Oh yeah. That's awesome.
And I was
And
just looking
I don't
and
care if things are cheesy or not. It's it's just if I know what I'm going in for, it's like sometimes it's better. It's actually even better for because of that reason.
Yeah, this came from some novels. I guess there was a bunch of novels about this particular guy Wolf, and it's I don't know. It's one of those movies that it's not gonna like. I don't know. It scored 5.5 out of 10 on the IMDb, but I would rate it much higher than that. I'd give it a 4 out of 5 because of what it was and the time that it was done. I just think it's a lot of fun.
It's cool.
I think the only thing that can maybe drive people nuts is sometimes Molly Ringwald sounds like scratching a chalkboard. Just
Nails on a chalkboard.
yeah.
Well, that's cool. It's cool that we both watched a movie to cover a movie today.
I have another one too, so
Oh, cool.
I was on the elliptical a couple days and I was like, what am I gonna watch? And I didn't feel like watching some stuff, so I watched what I recorded.
So the next one I'm gonna cover specifically. I guess it's more All-Star Squadron number 60, but I'm gonna cover kind of give a backstory for what had happened prior to
Yeah.
because just to start kind of with some information. So 10 issues prior in All-Star Squadron 50, there was a lot of stuff going on. Roy Thomas, is the writer. He was the writer for this entire series. And at this point, it went back and forth, and sometimes between the same issue, between Arvell Jones and Mike Clark. As the artists, but in issue 50 for their milestone issue, that was the first one that was a crisis tie-in. So they started commenting on the obviously on the Red Skies, and in terms of what he was trying to accomplish at that point, just prior, when Crisis was just getting started, you can tell that he was trying to get the characters in the right spot. By that I mean he has Uncle Sam come. He'd previously been in the book and had they had he'd come from Earth X, and he managed to get a couple people. I think Black Condor was one, and I don't remember who the other one was. It might have been the Ray to come back with them because this is an Earth that doesn't have any superheroes, and as much of a struggle Earth 2 is right at this point in terms of fighting World War II, Earth X is in much worse shape in terms of the Allies having problems.
The
So
Nazis won.
and but at this point it's still in the 40s, so it hasn't finished yet, but
Yeah.
they're having a lot of trouble. They're having a lot more trouble. So in 50, he basically has them pop back into the book and go to recruit several superheroes. So they say they need more help. And so basically, if you can think of a quality character, that's one of the characters that agrees to join and go back to Earth X. So it's the rest of the freedom fighters. It's the Blackhawks come. It Plastic Man comes. So those are the main ones. So they kind of come and go in issue 50. Also, the main story in 50 is you've got the current active roster of the JSA, which is a subset of the All-Star Squadron. All-Star Squadron at this point being recruit basically deputized by FDR, basically any superhero in the United States has been deputized as part of the All-Star Squadron at this point. So it includes all of the JSA members. So the active JSA members were supposed to have a meeting. Dr. Fate's the only one that ends up not being able to attend because he had an adventure just prior to this in England. And so anyhow, they're all meeting.
Is that where he's wearing the half helmet?
He's wearing the half helmet throughout, yeah, most of this.
So it's not Naboo. He was losing control, yeah.
About that a lot where, you know, at one point they actually, he puts the full helmet back on in one adventure just because they need him to, and he almost totally loses control, and it's like that's the last time I'm able to wear that. But it was interesting because they're all seated around the table, and these Nazis found out where their headquarters are and ended up doing something to leak the air, basically take the air out of the room, and they start dropping like flies, getting passed out. And the interesting thing is that one of the active members at this point is the Spectre. So everyone is knocked out up to this point. The Spectre, Hawkman, Starman, Johnny Thunder, Dr. Midnight, Atom, Wonder Woman, and Sandman. So they all get knocked out except for Wonder Woman and Spectre. And Wonder Woman starts feeling lightheaded. And Spectre, you know, says, you know, I've noticed that it's like now that you say that, the air is leaving and, you know, your super lungs have been able to compensate. But now it's to the point where there's, really no oxygen left. Of course, this isn't going to affect me. He's like, so let me, you know, I'm going to have to put a hole in this wall. And somehow he ends up getting knocked out, even to his own surprise. Up to this point where I've read all the way to issue 60, they never ended up explaining, although he's questioned it a couple times in the future issues, why he was knocked out. So it sounded like Roy Thomas was going to have some sort of explanation. I haven't seen it at this point. But anyhow, they all get captured and get put into these rockets that are launched out into outer space. They're all supposed to each land on one of the other planets in the solar system. So we have eight JSA members, eight other planets at this time. And because this is also during Crisis, Harbinger comes to recruit Firebrand. And later, I think that she gets Amazing Man, and I want to say Tarantula. As she's trying to get them, or Firebrand in particular, to the monitor's satellite, she's kind of like going through dimensions, and it throws all of their rockets, so they don't just go through space, but they go through a dimension too and land on other dimensions, planets, Mars, Jupiter. There's still our planets, but in other dimensions, or, you know, our solar system's planets, but other dimensions. At the same time, we had a few characters like Green Lantern, and I don't remember who the other two were. I want to say, Liberty Bell and Johnny Quick. They noticed that Firebrand had been taken by Harbinger, and they go after her and managed to get through the portal, but ended up landing on Earth-S with Shazam. They have a short adventure there and are able to get back to Earth too. So anyhow, that's all by way of past what had been going on in the past. So between 51 and 60 in the backups that he was doing other stories, but then he would periodically throw in an adventure of one of these JSA members on one of these alternate dimension planets. So the last one in number 59 is finally the Spectre, who ends up landing on Pluto, but it's a different Pluto where all of these worlds, every single one, was populated by some sort of civilization. And in every case, it explains has a short adventure and then sends them back out to be able to get back to Earth. And it's kind of where 60 picks up is Johnny Thunder commands his Thunderbolt and Spectre combine their power. The Thunderbolt and Spectre combines their power to gather everyone up all of the JSA members together, and they get back to Earth 2. They get back to the rest of the All-Star Squadron, and what we end up, they defeat those people responsible for sending them away on the rockets. They get, when they go back to the All-Star Squadron headquarters, they realize that the rest of the squadron is in the middle of a situation with a strange robot that came from outer space and just crash landed. Robot Man recently had been feeling very much, I don't know what the right word is, but definitely depressed about his situation, that he's just a brain in a metal shell. And is he really, does anyone consider him actually a human being, or they think of him as just a robot?
And so that's why he's depressed in Metal Man at the convention when nobody's in his line.
Right. Same deal. Nobody even talks to this poor guy. I forgot about that. So he takes exception to, like, they all start attacking because this robot is very confused and damaged. They all start attacking the robot to even just destroy it. And he starts almost like, thinking because he feels a certain way, he starts feeling sympathetic towards this robot and basically gets them to hold off. And he takes the robot away to then repair it against the All-Star's wishes. And they end up like doing a whole thing where they're having a vote and stuff. Should they go get the robot? And they ended up overwhelmingly vote yes. Robot Man is so upset about all this that he actually even starts fighting the rest of the All-Star Squadron before cooler heads prevail. And this female robot, who he's named Mechanique, I should say, explains that she comes from the far future and that she needed to save somebody in order to keep a terrible world-destroying war in her era that makes the World War II seem like nothing. So she describes exactly who she was there to save and what's going to happen. A little girl is walking with her parents, and she's holding a cat. The cat runs out into the street, and she runs after the cat. She gets run down, and the car slams into a pole and blows up. So that's what's going to happen in the short future. So Green Lantern and Firebrand fly off to try to figure out, they can detect where this is based on the description. They find exactly that family walking, and they manage to save both the girl and the person in the car, who ends up being an admiral for the Navy on his way to a strategy session. So they're like, oh my God, that was a close one, but I guess she must be telling the truth. So they go back and explain that she's telling the truth. Oh, also, I should say that the previous issue is the first time that Aquaman appears and meets all of the rest of the Golden Age heroes.
Our Aquaman, though, from Earth?
It's the Earth 2 Aquaman.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, he was around in the Golden Age as well.
Yeah, the Golden Age, yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's why you want me to buy the more fun comics.
Yeah,
it's
exactly why I want you to buy more fun. More Fun 73. So even though now the issues that I'm reading, that I'm explaining, 59 and 60, are well past when Crisis is over. Roy Thomas has put in the letters column that basically this whole story, culminating with issue 60, is all of the stuff that was happening during the Crisis, and that's why Superman, Batman, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman are all appearing in these issues, is because this all happened prior. They make reference more to the Red Skies. One thing that is kind of confusing is that Firebrand talks about being taken away and suddenly being back and doesn't remember anything what happened, but I don't remember enough about Crisis as if she wasn't there until the end and she came back early or what, but apparently it's still going on and she's back, but she can't, you know, tell any details. But aside from that, they go ahead and once they realize that Mechanique is there to save human history, they're all friends. And now that they have everyone together, they take a huge, big side panel picture where you have to turn the comic book sideways in order to see everyone on the squadron. Just pretty interesting. It was a pretty cool picture. And in the last couple pages, it kind of shows that Robot Man is outside talking to Mechanique. And I don't understand this, and maybe they wrote it incorrectly, but suddenly Robot Man starts to get suspicious of Mechanique, and she had said a strange word when she was in the previous issue before she had been kind of knocked out, if you will. And she denies that she doesn't know what that word means, and rot wang. And she's like, I don't know what that means. And he doesn't believe her. So finally she breaks down and starts talking about that where she's from, that there's an human elite, and all the masses are only can stay alive because they're laboring and doing, terrible work. They're basically slaves. And, to infiltrate the rebels, they created her, to look like a robot. And then, she was working, and she realized exactly what was going to, basically this scientist, Rotwing, realized that this little girl was going to cause him to, cause his downfall. And so he recreated her, recreated the robot Mechanique, and sent her to cause the girl Maria to never come into an existence. And then Robot Man says, but Firebrand and Green Lantern saved both the Admiral and the little girl, and my God, that was part of your plan, wasn't it? And she says, yes, your friends think they saved mankind's future when in truth they obliterated it. I don't understand what she did save the girl. So I don't understand what basically it says that she was there so the Maria would never come into existence. I don't understand. It seems to be a direct conflict of what she's saying and what she did. But so that I don't understand, but aside from that, putting that aside, what's interesting is that she goes on to explain that because of her creator scientific genius, this robot single-handedly held back the effects of a recent phenomenon codenamed the Crisis on the Infinite Earths from finalizing in this time period. And now that her mission is successfully completed, she can at last allow the effects of the crisis to take hold. And with all of Earth's history forever altered, and no one either in the present, past, or future are aware of it. Perhaps your all-star friends could prevent Rotwing's future or my future if they knew of it, but they never shall, for not even you will remember what has transpired here tonight. And he kind of all of a sudden falters, and then it says, I'm fine. I don't know what just happened. And then he starts repeating exactly what he said earlier before they had that conversation. So obviously he doesn't remember any of it. And then at the very end, it's got FDR saying, oh, you finally got around to taking a picture of all the All-Star Squadron, just like you asked me. Johnny Quick was the one that took it. He's like, oh my God, look at this. Matter of fact, any costume hero who isn't in this photo must be so obscure that nobody ever heard of him. And now it's another panel which you have to turn to the side. And I'm going to post them both later today, but it's this huge panel of all of your World War II heroes, but now this time with Uncle Sam and all the freedom fighters and Plastic Man all in the middle. Superman's gone, Batman and Robin are gone, Aquaman, Wonder Woman are gone, as if they never existed. So it was absolutely fascinating to read this, to be like right there, like in the last few things, he totally explains like how they pulled them out of this.
Yeah.
As side by side, like, you know, the panels where you have to turn on the side. It was absolutely fascinating. It was really interesting. The other thing that I thought was interesting is he continues in the letter pages talking about the next that they're going to be doing a post-crisis All-Star Squadron with a new number one. And obviously that never
didn't happen. Yeah.
No. So I want to keep reading to see exactly what happened. For all intents and purposes, this is the last issue of All-Star Squadron, even though it's not. There's seven more issues after this, but every single one is either an origin story of one of the All-Star Squadron, like whether it's Liberty Bell or Robot Man, or it retells a Golden Age tale from the past. So those last seven. So this was the last issue that had an ongoing continuity.
Well, there might be something interesting in that last letters page.
That's what I'm hoping. What I'm hoping, because I want to read. Because he kept mentioning, and I did notice a change in his tone. Whereas like 3 months before, he was talking about, okay, we're going to be relaunching this after the crisis with a post-crisis team, you know, that account for these other people that obviously now never appeared in World War II. And in issue 60, he talks about it, but he says when and if it happens. So it's interesting that his tone has shifted to that it is happening to he's not even sure if it's coming out now.
Well, what I heard around that time, though, is it was a real stressful time for the people that had ongoings because they didn't know if they were going to be brought back at all. Like,
well,
it was like
said a lot of that too.
You have so and so on Flash. You have who kicked off Flash? Was it Messner Loebs? No, it
Mike
was
Barrett?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then it was George Perez on Wonder Woman and, you know, John Byrne on Superman. And so they were like taking away the old teams, putting in new teams. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know what Roy Thomas came out on after that.
But you can tell that he was annoyed. He was off in England for a while during the middle of the crisis run. Like when it was actually being set up and I guess if not published, then at least a lot of the decisions that we're making being made later in the run of the series,
mm-hmm.
because at first it sounded like, you know, his stories that he's told wouldn't be retconned or whatever, that's, you know, what happened in the past. And now it's a crisis on it where everything's now been moved to one Earth. Whereas later, when he got back from England, he learned that no, we're telling you literally, Superman literally was never in the 40s. Earth 2, Earth 1, that character did not exist.
That's true, but they did.
It should. But in terms of what he was planning in terms of his storytelling, it totally took him off guard.
That's the one thing that drives me crazy is people use the term retcon like it didn't matter, but it did. In other words, it's a linear history. Crisis happens, and then this happened.
And then
like Flashpoint led to New 52. It's part of the plot.
No, you're absolutely right. Because I mean, take Earth 2 Superman. He appeared years and years later. In what was it? Was it Infinite Crisis, or which one of those was it that he was?
I remember him in Infinite Crisis.
Yeah, so I mean,
he might have happened earlier.
I think that's the one though, because him and Lois got that kind of like happy farewell at the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths, because they didn't actually kill him off. But yeah, it was. I mean, Mike, as much as I might say, I didn't really end up caring for New 52 and stuff, I totally agree with you. Everything, it's a linear story. It, like, what happens post-crisis is because of the event of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So this is what happened to this character, that character.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's not that it didn't matter. That's all what actually happened until crisis came and kind of merged all the Earths together.
They really didn't know at the time what to do with the past.
No.
They didn't know what to do with the JSA characters coming out of Crisis.
They didn't know. They had a little trouble with the Legion as well because of the Superboy.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got that. That's why we got Zero Hour later on.
Yeah.
Same with Hawkman. They didn't know. They didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting too because Hawkman still exists after after Mechanique does what she's doing and allowed Crisis to go through and eliminates those characters, Hawkman's still there. So,
yeah,
you know, they're still taking the tact that there was, I don't know what their story was in 1986. There was two totally different.
But it was easy Hawkman. To use Hawkman, though, if you could, because the Hawkman that came out of that, most people think Geoff Johns created the generations of Hawkman, but it wasn't him. It was somebody before him.
I don't remember. Yeah, but it was seriously, this. I've really gotten into, like, I started picking this up again to read after a little bit of a break. I had read up.
It's a good time to read because
yeah,
you don't have new comics. Nothing. So, yeah, so you might as well dig into something.
Do you know what I'm going to read next? Because I'm only 6 issues away from finishing this.
What?
I'm going to read DP7.
Oh, wow.
All 32 issues.
I don't know if I have a full run of that.
I had recently gotten the full run.
I think I'm really close.
Maybe a year ago, I finally completed it. So I'm like, I'm going to read that. That's Mark Gruenwald, too. And I remember liking what I had right at the time. I just had a lot of gaps in the issue. So I finally completed it. Like, I'm just going to read the whole thing, including like when those one-shots come, whether it's the draft or pit or whatever, you know, I'll go ahead and read that and then get back into the DP7. And I want to read the whole thing, see how it ends up feeling to me now. And it's funny that I happened to pick it because it's right nearly at the same time as the end of this run, right? And it starts in 1980. Yeah. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And it's a little bit of a shorter run. It's only 32 issues instead of the 67 that I ran or that I read with this one.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I started reading All-Star Squadron in the early issues, but then never completed.
I think that it got better as it went on. I was kind of
I liked it at the beginning, though, too, because at the beginning they used Plastic Man a lot, and then he kind of vanished.
Yeah, he was the FBI.
Yeah. I'm always a sucker for Plastic Man. I don't know why, but I you throw him on anything, and I just like. I go gaga over Plastic Man.
I'm a big fan of Plastic Man myself. Yeah. So what else do you have?
I have Battle Beyond the Stars. So this was the other movie that I recorded off of the Sony channel. I think you can watch Battle Beyond the Stars on Amazon Prime for free.
Oh, okay.
When this came out, it was one of my favorite science fiction stories of all time. I mean, yes,
it is on Amazon Prime.
There was Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and Logan's Run, and then Battle Beyond the Stars.
Like I never heard of it.
It was ranked up there very, very high. What's very interesting is this is like one of the first times that James Cameron got involved in film. And if you look at the cover of the movie poster, you will see the ship that they call Nell. It's an AI that runs the ship.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see two big breasts. Well, James Cameron did that because he wanted this. And if you look at the structure of the ship, it looks like a woman.
Yeah.
You got the arms, the breasts, and then you sort of have the back end. But he designed the ship to sort of look like a woman, and James Cameron did that. This is a Roger Corman film. Roger Corman is known for doing a lot of cheap films. This one he had $2 million, so it was a lot more money than he's used to dealing with.
He's got some names in this too.
Yep, we got Richard Thomas, who's known for John Boy Walton, mm-hmm. Plays Shad. He's the main character. Robert Vaughn plays Gelt. John Saxon is Sador. He's the villain. George Peppard is Cowboy. And then
good old George Peppard.
Yeah, Sybil Danning plays Saint X-Men. She's interesting enough, Barb was sort of watching pieces of this because I was watching it on Friday, and she had come home from work and was just watching the tail end, and she's like, how does that woman keep the costume over her nipple. She's got two costumes. She's got one that looks like a Valkyrie, and then when she goes down to the planet Earth, she's got this like black, it looks like electrical tape, costume, and it's not symmetrical. So like one breast is covered, and then it goes like at a diagonal, and then it's like where's her nipple? Because it's like barely covering her nipple, and it's like how does it even stay on there? And they said they had to like use band-aids and stuff to make it stay. I was
Wow.
just reading the factoids of that, and because Barb was fascinated with how does that stay up. This
I'm gonna have to check this out.
movie I love for many reasons, but it is if you take the Magnificent Seven movie, which is a Western, and this is based like if even if you go beyond that, there was one of those samurai movies, Seven Samurai or something like that, that Magnificent Seven was based off of. But what it is there's this huge evil that's gonna consume a planet, and John Boy has to go try to find mercenaries and people that will fight for him. And it's the same sort of thing with the Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner. They have to go find these cowboys that'll try to fight for this town for almost nothing. So Akir is the world. They're a very peaceful world. And Sador comes and he basically says, "I own you." And his ship is really cool because it looks like a giant mouth in the front. And it opens up and it shoots. It's like a Star Destroyer. It could destroy worlds. So it has like, it's like a moving Death Star. It can blow up an entire planet. And they said, "Hey, when I come back, you're just gonna come be servants of mine, and you're gonna supply food to me and my warriors, and I will consume your world." And that's that. If you fight me, I will just blow you up. So John Boy goes out. He goes to the first world because there was only one person on there. There's a blind guy that actually fought before in a war, but other than him, they don't know what like war is like. So John Boy takes the ship Nell up into space to go find somebody, and they're supposed to get this guy who's a scientist that builds weapons, and it's his first stop. So he gets there and he gets in this contraption, and it like takes him where the female is, and all there are robotic androids on this ship. And he finds the female. She's the only human along with her father. Although her father's kind of like Darth Vader in that he's just a head and everything else is being controlled with machinery. And the father's like, you can't beat Sador, but I want you to breed with my daughter because she's the only human on the planet. So we're going to use you for sex." And John Boy's like, "Oh, I have to escape because the world is waiting for me." And he escapes, but the woman goes with him. She's very sympathetic to his cause. His daughter flies off in one direction to try to recruit people, and he goes off in another direction. She ends up recruiting the Kamen, who's like a lizard guy, and he's got like a Conan the Barbarian servant and two little creatures that are about 4 feet tall that can turn sound into heat. And she recruits them, whereas John Boy goes and gets Robert Vaughn, and he's fascinating. He plays the exact same character in Magnificent Seven. He's in Magnificent Seven, I believe. And his character is he has so many bounties on his head, and he lives on a world of gambling, but he's the only one left because the whole planet shut down after they were forced out of like. Crime was forced out of there, and gambling was, and prostitution was deemed bad. And he's the only one there, and he's like sitting on gold. And he has all this money, but nowhere to spend it. And he sits with his back to the wall because everybody's out to kill him. And John Boy's like, I need your help, but I don't have any money to offer you. And he says, well, if you can offer me a warm meal and a place to sleep, that's all I ask for. And he says, you got it. That's the easiest deal I can make. And he goes off on and fights with them. And he runs into a guy, George Peppard, who's cowboy. And he's kind of like a Han Solo type guy. Plays the harmonica, watches old movies. He's got VHSs on his old spaceship, and he's showing him. He says, "Let me show you the Alamo." That's what you're heading against. You're gonna lose this war. He sort of teams up with him, and he's got weapons, so he could at least help the ground people have weapons. And then they meet that Valkyrie warrior. She's absolutely fascinating because she kills. She essentially kills John Boy, but she has no. She challenges people, but has no weapons on her ship. So Shad, who's John Boy, basically says, I can't use you. You're useless. She turns out to be like one of the best warriors in the whole fight because she can fly that ship. It's the fastest plane in the whole thing. And she makes like an ultimate sacrifice where she's actually destroys the Death Star, if you will, like the gun that could blow up the whole planet. So she's badass. And I think that's like the bulk of. Oh, they get the nest, the what are they called? The Nestor. They're fascinating. They're like the Borg, and they're bored. So they're like one mind thinks like the Hive, but there's like six of them, and they fly this like ship of light, and he recruits them. So he's got like a whole crew. It's like the Magnificent Seven. They go back and fight war on Akir. Cowboy trains the ground forces, but they have like a sonic weapon, but that's when the two small people come in and they're able to turn the sound to heat and destroy the sound weapon and give them a chance on the ground because the ground forces have to attack because the Star Destroyer is destroyed by the Valkyrie woman. And they eventually win and all the heroes die except for John Boy and the woman. That's with him. That's plays the scientist. So it is a really cool, a cool movie.
Yeah, I think I want to try that out.
Yeah, it is. If you can like get past and know you're getting into a Roger Corman film and you think of it in terms of plot and like story, it's really tight. It's really good. But I'm
Yeah.
always like. I love movies where you have like this band of like Last Starfighter is another one of my favorites
Oh, I
because
love that movie.
this is like that. It's
I
because
haven't seen that in a million years.
you have to form a team and your odds are way against you. Like you don't have a chance. And that's what Last Starfighter is about. That's what this is about. You don't have a on paper it doesn't look like you can win.
That's
Yeah,
awesome.
it's awesome film.
That's great. You picked out some good ones. I
Yeah.
have just one more comic.
Sure.
And this won't be too long. I read it this morning. It's Alpha Flight number 107. I have a bunch that I haven't read yet, and I was just going through them, and this one stood out for me because it's guest starring X Factor, and it has the team of Alpha Flight all dressed up in the X Factor costumes on the cover.
Yeah.
It's World Tour 92, so I guess so. It sounds like they're going from country to country to see how different countries handle their superhero. Like if the governments work with the superheroes or something like that. So in this one, there's some strange goings on in Poughkeepsie, New York, and it's the detective calls Washington and says that he wants some superpowered heroes down. He wants X Factor. Don't remember exactly what was going on in X Factor at the time, but apparently they were working for the U.S. government under with Havoc. So, and I'm just I'm just realizing that I looks like I totally skipped a page when I was reading this. But anyhow,
That's why you were confused for a page.
I was confused that like why all of the why Alpha Flight was wearing those costumes right away, and it has a total explanation here on the second and third page. But anyhow, so what I read was that there's this man all dressed in a tuxedo at this graveyard, and there's these zombies, these animated corpses, pulling him along, and there's another one that looks in a lot better shape than the rest, saying that what's wrong? Are you upset about seeing the bride before the wedding? And she's like, well, if I've learned anything, some that things don't never come off the way that you plan them. And so then it cuts to Alpha Flight and X Factor flying in on a helicopter to Poughkeepsie, and they're talking to each other, and they land, and they basically the detective starts telling them what happened. It started about 3 weeks ago with a series of crazy break-ins at florists, music supply stores, caterers, and a dress shop. And she's like, and he's like, it was not your regular targets. And but what happened this morning, like we didn't need help with that. What happened this morning is half of the city woke up to find that the other half is gone. 300 people, 300 men, women, and children just disappeared. The tracks of mud left in their homes and their front stoops indicate they were dragged away in the middle of the night, dragged here to the cemetery. And, any attempt to investigate has been met with opposition. It's like something or someone doesn't want us there. I don't believe in ghosts, so I'm thinking that it's a mutant. And so Havoc's like, okay, well, I guess it makes sense that you called us there. And Madrox, of all people, says, this might sound crazy, but it sounds to me like someone's throwing a majorly sick wedding. And everyone turns and just glares at him, right? So he's like, all right, fine, maybe not. Probably somebody just trying to take over the world, right? So they go into the cemetery, and well, they keep walking. They see these two corpses, and one has a sign on it that says "Bride" with a question mark. The other one says "Groom?" question mark. And you hear off panel, "Yes!" And Havoc goes, "Shut up, Madrox!" And
New.
then whispering, Madrox whispers, "Told you so, told you so." And they tell him to shut up again, right? And they're like, "All right, well, they're not attacking." They're just standing there. Let's have them escort us into the cemetery. So Madrox's like, "Oh, sure, but it was my idea. I'm an idiot." But now, a visitor, because it was Heather Hudson who said that, "Let's do that." Like, now she's a genius, but do I get any credit? Everyone at the same time goes, "Shut up, Madrox!" So it was funny how much like humor was in this issue. It was very funny. It's written by Scott Lobdell. And I don't know who the artist is. It just says last names, and the last name's Morgan. So I have no idea who that artist might have been, unless somebody sticks in your mind with the last name of Morgan. I don't know
No.
who that would have been. But anyhow, they get escorted, and they're at a big mausoleum, and there's all these live people, sitting in chairs, and they're all being held down by corpses, also like right behind them. There's a dead band, and there's a dead priest. There's a live groom who says, "Thank God you're here. You have to help us." And there's a dead, although not in bad shape, apparently recently dead, bride. So she starts flipping out. Is like, "What are you doing here? If you're with the band, you're too late. Like, I had to replace you." And she's like, and Havoc's like, "We're not with the band." "Then who are you, and why are you crashing my wedding?" And so the groom speaks up, and he goes, "Amy, honey, they're with me. They're my guests." So she goes, "Oh, Malcolm, that's so sweet. I knew you would come around." And she starts hugging Heather Hudson, saying, "Oh, I'm sorry I was rude. I'm just under so much strain." And they say, "Well, you know, it's very stressful to, you know, to start a, you know, to plan a wedding." It's like, "You don't know the half of it. We were supposed to be married a couple, you know, like a month ago or whatever it was, and you know, we had a great rehearsal, and they served roast duck, but Malcolm here was too nervous to eat. I spent the rest of the night throwing up. It was food poisoning, and 2 hours later, I was pronounced dead. But even though my body had stopped, my brain kept working, and I could feel like them doing everything to me on the autopsy, and I was screaming in my head, and I kept screaming for days afterwards after they buried me. But finally, I guess my fury must have like activated me because I was able to start moving, and even though I was out of the ground, it was still no better. And when I started thinking that I could control my dead body, maybe I can control other dead bodies. So that's when she raised all these corpses, and she's like, "You know what? But then, no, but they can't talk. They can't love me." She's like, "I want to go through with the wedding. I want everything to be perfect." So they start con the team starts consulting each other and asking Sasquatches, you know, if a mutant power can kick in after death. And he's like, "I don't know. Like, most of the time it's puberty, but death certainly is the ultimate physiological change." So apparently that's what they're going with, is that her mutant power activated after death, which is why she's is animate and is conscious. So they're like, "Oh my God, she was conscious during her whole autopsy. No, no wonder she snapped." So nobody's paying attention to her. So she screams, "I said, if everyone will sit down, we can start." And they're still just standing there. So she gets pissed off and sicks all of the zombies on them. So Madrix has an idea because they're totally, totally overwhelmed. He says to Northstar, "You know, punch me in the face as fast as you can at super speed." So he's like, "I don't understand why you're asking me to do this, but I'm going to go ahead and do it." So punches him 100 times, and of course, each time he gets hit, he makes a duplicate, right? So he has grabbed Aurora and kind of like moves ahead because of all of the duplicates forming behind him. It gets to the front where the bride and groom are, and Aurora starts talking to them and talks to the groom specifically and says, "You know, you were once prepared to marry her, right?" And he's like, "Yeah, I loved her, but..." She's like, "No, there are no buts." She's like, "Love isn't something that's interned with the body. It's eternal." And he's like, "Are you saying I should go through with it?" And so she says, "I'm telling you should do whatever your heart tells you to do." So Malcolm comes up to Amy and says, "You know, let them go. We don't have time for this. We have a date with the preacher." So Amy can't believe her ears, and the preacher is standing there. Of course, he can't talk. So Malcolm says, "I, Malcolm, take Amy to be my wife, to have and to hold and to cherish." And so then she starts taking her vows, and as she's talking, she starts collapsing into, you know, she starts getting older and like more decayed. And she finishes her vows just as she collapses into almost nothingness, like just the skeletons. And he finishes "To Death Do Us Part," and that was the end of the issue. So it was just a one and done. I thought the humor was absolutely incredible. It was like we've talked about that before. It's hard to do humor in a comic book, but I laughed out loud like several times in this story. It kind of took me by surprise, if nothing else. I didn't expect a humorous story, but of course, I think X Factor at the time was heavy on comedy, and maybe guest starring, that's what they decided to do. But
well, they had
a
their comic,
very issue.
they had their comic relief with Guido and Madrax, you know.
Yeah, sure. But this was a lot of fun to read. I'm really glad I just randomly
Scott
grabbed.
Lobdell was writing a lot, like right after the Image people left.
Yeah.
Like, he was writing X-Men, he was writing Alpha Flight, he was writing all
Oh,
kinds
yeah.
of stuff.
He was a busy guy.
I just saw a picture of him recently because I bought a bunch of old Wizards, and There was an article about Scott Lobdell, and I was like, wow, he was young back then.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I was yesterday. I don't know if you heard at all. They're doing this like online Comic-Con this weekend.
I didn't. I've heard about it, but I didn't pursue it. Like, I didn't click on anything. What does it mean? Is it to
It's just they do they're doing like Skype interviews, like video interviews with different people and stuff. And
Oh, so like panels.
So I went on yesterday because they had Dante and his girlfriend Veronica from Clerks.
Yeah.
So I told Stacy, I'm like, Stacy, you got to come here. I'm like, this is the downside of not appearing in public, like throughout your career, I guess, if you want to
Yeah.
say, like you were known for something and you kind of disappeared for 25 years. Because I've seen Brian O'Halloran and Dante all the time. Like, he was in Clerks 2, then he's in the comic book Men, and so I've seen.
37 dicks.
That's right. But I've seen him on and off, so I know
Is
how to
that the
date.
girl that was with him?
Yes,
Oh, the
Veronica,
one that
So I've seen him throughout, as he's aged, but I have not seen her since whatever she looked like in, what, 1994 or 95? I look and I'm like, oh my God, she's an old woman.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
incredible how we all
but
get
if I would
old.
have seen her like the whole time all along, I would have, it
Did
wouldn't
she
have been a.
say 37 dicks?
She did
Right.
not. She did not. At
At
the same time?
the same time?
37. My girlfriend sucks 37 dicks
Yeah.
at the same time.
I don't know if I got the number right. Is that right? 37? It sounds right.
It is. Yeah,
I've,
37.
I like their movies a lot. Like, I just watched the reboot. It's on Amazon Prime for
How was the
free.
reboot? I haven't tried it yet.
If you like Kevin Smith and you've watched all his movies, you'll
I
like
have.
that because this is like a step through like all the different movies.
Nice.
Like, it has references to Chasing Amy, Dogma,
Well,
Clerks, Clerks 2, all that stuff.
he's already done writing Mallrats 2.
Yeah.
And I guess he's going to write a Clerks 3. I guess
It
we'll see.
has reference to Mallrats. Yeah,
Nice.
it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. But anyhow,
Mallrats was my, like, when I first saw it, I didn't like it as much, but
no?
then now I wa on rewatch, I like it a lot. So
Which one? This one that you're talking about?
the one I'm talking about, the reboot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm talking about like movies. Like, my favorite of his movies is Chasing Amy because it has like a serious tone
Your
and a
favorite Chasing Amy
ridiculous
because
one.
it's the best one.
Chasing Amy? Is it the
Yeah.
last one?
Oh, it's the best one.
Oh, it's the best one, yeah.
I totally agree,
But
100%.
next to that, I like Dogma because it has that religious like thing, and I just like when they play off a religion.
It's probably a pretty much a tie for me between Clerks and Mallrats after Chasing Amy.
Yeah, Chasing Amy, Dogma, and then Clerks for
Gotcha.
me.
Yeah.
Easy top three.
I remember seeing Mallrats. We got a free, I don't remember how we got it, but we got a pass for one of those, preview nights or whatever to see it for free.
Yeah.
And so, as you can imagine, a lot of people, just because it's free, they will go, right?
Yeah.
So I was over the moon because I'd seen Clerks and I loved Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Halfway through the movie, you saw grown, like older couples, like I'm saying probably in their 60s, get up
And
and
leave.
announce loudly their dissatisfaction with the movie. I remember specifically this guy getting up and leaving is, I can't believe you're all sitting for this, and like left. It was hilarious.
Well, I agree that there's a generation that won't understand Kevin Smith. My parents don't understand Kevin
No,
Smith.
my parents don't either.
My parents would enjoy Chasing Amy, but of all the movies, that's the only one I could point them to. The rest of them, there's a certain level of things that I think a certain generation just won't get.
Yeah. I totally agree. But it was always interesting to see that yesterday. Kevin Smith himself is going to do a little interview thing at 1 p.m. my time today,
Ah.
half an hour.
Do they have any comic ones?
They had some comic creators. Ahoy did a quick 20-minute one yesterday. Tom Peyer and Stuart Moore and Mark Russell, and I can't remember who else was on there. So they had a quick, I mean, they just did their own kind of,
Is it
they,
a Zoom thing or is audio only or what?
no, it's video too. You just
How
go
do
on
you
the
get how
website,
do you
click,
get onto it?
just go to Mainframe Comic Con, and the
Okay.
front thing will ask you to, like, there's a button to click the live stream, and then it just starts coming through, like, through YouTube. But I mean, it stays on their page, but yeah.
I would be more interested if they had an interview with like Roy Thomas or something, like
No, they didn't have.
some of the
They have some
classics.
more creators later today, I know too, but they don't have any. I think Donny Cates and what's her name? Is it Megan Hutchinson? Yeah, I think that they either had one yesterday or today. There's a handful of them. I've got it actually right here.
I did watch Some Good News on YouTube. That's the Krasinski guy, the guy from
Oh,
The
I've
Office.
heard about this. Yeah,
Yeah, that
they've
was really
shown me
good.
some stuff.
That's
The president of Trauma is going to be on it, 1 p.m. your time.
For some reason, I'm more interested in the behind the scenes of comics. But it has to be like older stuff. That's what I would
Yeah,
want to see.
no, I'm not seeing anything. Archie is doing something tonight. Stephanie Phillips is. Oh, J.M.
Stephanie Phillips is
DeMatteis is,
good. I
yeah.
like her.
J.M. DeMatteis is going to be on at 7 p.m. my time, 5 p.m. your time. He's older. It's really about it, though. Ron Mars.
He's good too.
Yeah, that looks like about it.
Well, I have one more, but it's going to be fast. So this has to do with our co-host, Kirk. I decided I wanted to find the issue where he got off on Top Dog.
Okay. Or Top Dog, yeah,
Yeah,
sorry.
so on our little chat, they were pointing me, at different covers, and I read every single one they pointed me to, and it didn't have it. But then I decided, you know what? Top Dog is not that bad. I'm gonna start at the beginning and just go forward, and I found it in issue one. So, like his shirt changed where he had the Spider-Man logo. Didn't have the Spider-Man logo, and then he had a striped shirt with the whole shirt changed to a striped shirt in the same sort of sequence of events. So yeah, I saw what he was talking about, but
You own all the dishes?
I read it's on Marvel Unlimited, and I thought it would be a good thing to I've used my DC Universe app quite a bit. But I haven't been using my Marvel Unlimited.
Oh, okay.
So I read some Silver Surfer yesterday, and then I decided to go down the top cat the top dog thing.
I'm
And
only I
the
was only wondering because 13 and 14 are going for double digits.
What do you mean?
It looks like at least on our track on our in comic base, it says $34 and $31 for 13 and 14.
Yeah, I wonder why that is.
Yeah, just probably small print runs.
Yeah, but why? Oh, 14 is high too. Yeah, that's probably really low. But
I
10,
just thought.
I read 10, which has Spider-Man on the cover. That was a really good story because Top Dog's a dog that could talk, and he hangs out with his owner, who he met in issue one, and nobody knows he can talk except for The kid, but there in issue one, there's like a richy rich kid that's bad, and he finds out he can talk, but nobody believes him. So he's the only one, and the sister has had his sister has seen incidents of him talking, but he's able to get out of it, so she can never like catch him in the act. But this was a comic book store related story, and I really liked it because it's about a boy whose father owns a comic book store, and he's kind of a neglected boy, but his father does love him. Well, it turns out that his father used like a gangster to borrow money from so he could open the comic book store, and he's not able to pay him back. Like, he can't pay him back the investment. So even though he's going to have one of his best friends come over on the weekend and play Spider-Man to try to drive sales up, the guy doesn't want to wait. So he's like, I just want to burn it down. I want to burn this down and light it on fire, and then we'll get insurance money off of this comic store. And the father doesn't know what to do, but he kind of doesn't have a choice at this time. So that's going to happen, but Top Dog overhears that that's going to happen, and then him and his owner decide they needed to get involved and stop this from happening. And they actually save the comic store, and they do have the event, and they use the guy that's playing Spider-Man to do it because the guy playing Spider-Man ends up knocking out the mob guy. So yeah, that's kind of cool.
So how many of these total did you read?
I read four. I read
Oh, okay.
issue one, two, 10, and I can't remember what the other one was because I was looking for the I was looking for the ish. Oh, I read four. So I read one, two, four. Most of them were pictures that showed up on our chat session, you know, on Twitter. And he threw me at issue two because he had a Spider-Man shirt on it, and then he threw me at issue 10 because Spider-Man was on it, and it wasn't either one. It turns out it's issue one, but you could see in issue one he has that Spider-Man shirt. Yeah, that is the shirt. There's a scene where he's like eating and he doesn't have the Spider-Man shirt, and then there's a scene where he's back at the house. He has a Spider-Man shirt, and then the next panel, it's a striped Spider-Man shirt.
It's just bizarre.
Yeah.
I saw the Spider-Man one. I could chalk it up that there was whoever it is too lazy to draw the logo around whatever he would like. I don't remember if he has a bowl of cereal or something in front of him,
Yeah.
or whatever. But how did they get a striped? How did they suddenly decide to do a striped shirt and not note?
Well, I could see that somebody that's not paying attention to the story could do that because the next morning he wakes up and changes shirts and it is a striped shirt. But
Oh, really?
the fact of the matter is that's not the next morning. So it
Okay.
doesn't transition right.
Right. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, but it is an entertaining comic. This is my first exposure to Star Comics, so
Oh, really?
yeah, I
I'm
always thought
sorry.
they were kids' books. I didn't want anything to do with
They
them.
are kids' books.
But they're kids' books that are all ages, and I think this is all ages because it is pretty entertaining. It holds its own. I'm gonna finish it. I'm gonna read that. I'm gonna read the whole thing on the app. They have the 14 issues out there.
Like I said, the one that I stuck with, at the time was Wally the Wizard. I have
Yeah, they have that
all
there
of.
too. I was gonna try that. And they have Planetary as well.
Yeah, I didn't
So
get Planetary until I was much older. In term,
yeah.
I mean the name, that it was Planetary. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? I didn't understand
Planetary. I didn't get it until you told me now.
There you go. See? Because I always said Planet Terry.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah.
Because I think Planetary is the Warren Ellis book.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is the Star Comics version.
But I decided I wanted to use the app, you know,
Yeah, that's good.
Because that's one of my strategies to saving money is I think you do you were doing some of it where you said, well, I can read the stuff that I feel, neutral about on the app
Well, I
and
even did
still
that with Spider-Woman. I had the essential, but it was missing like the Marvel premiere or whatever. So I'm like, well, I'll read that on the app then. Of course, then I went and bought it. My heart was in the right place.
That's right. Yeah, I have the Spider-Woman's. That's the series that I remember we were talking about She-Hulk. The Spider-Woman series is the series that I believe I bought a full run of, but I'd never inventoried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't own like any of that.
I almost did that this weekend. I almost got one box out of the closet and just said, I'm going to inventory it. And then I got lazy.
Should do it.
Yeah, I might do it. I sometimes struggle on what to do 'cause my weekend's my weekend and I fight with myself on what I want to do with my free time.
Well, because you have, there's only
There's
many
so many
hours.
hours and like Barb's gonna have 3 days off next week, so I may be able to take one day off, but I'm not sure. I know I can't tomorrow. 'Cause I have like meetings I have to go to, and then I have to work on a report that's due, and I don't know how long that's gonna take me.
Did you have to wear a mask when you're at work?
Yeah, they got more restrictive, but like if you're in your cube and nobody's in it, then you
Then
don't have to
take.
put your mask. But if somebody comes to your cube, you have to put your mask on. If you go to the bathroom or anywhere where there's situations where you could run into somebody, then you have to have a mask. It gets hot too. I mean, you get like, and I wear glasses, so I kind of have to like, I can't put it on the rim of my.
Oh, yeah, I'm
I kind of
the
have
same
to
way.
pull them out a little farther than normal. Even if I pinch the nose piece, I still get foggy.
That's pain. I mean, I'm glad to hear that that they're taking it seriously like that, though. It's,
Yeah, and
I
they
mean.
still have like. My hands are like just dry as hell because anytime you go to a common keyboard, you have to clean it before and after.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then you open doors and stuff, and near every door they have the hand sanitizer. So you're sanitizing your hands like almost like you're at the hospital. Like you know how they have it in the room and out the room? That's kind of like the way they have it set up at my work.
Wow. It's just, it's a whole different world, Mike.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think it's ever going to be exactly the same as it was before either.
Yeah, I know I'll take social distancing a little more seriously. I know that.
Yeah.
It's a little eye-opening how
Yeah.
easy it is to get disease like the flu and stuff, but the flu you'd always think, oh, if I get the flu, I get the flu. I mean, I got the flu shot, but I think since I've got the flu shot, I haven't really gotten the flu. Or if I did get it, it was like way lower than what I'm used to.
Yeah,
Because
not
when I
very
got the
serious.
flu, it was like, oh my God, I felt like I was gonna die.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
All right, well, I think we can wrap this one up.
Yeah, sounds good.
You're on Twitter at Rob Krieger,
Oh, yes.
and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch, and you can find us at geekbrunchpodcast.com.
And Chris Ivy.
Yeah, and Chris Ivy, who we lost to D&D, maybe.
Oh, I hope not permanently.
We might have got a test. He says no, sorry, but he didn't say if
Yeah.
it was because it was D&D or not.
Yeah.
But we had we covered it pretty good. We
Yeah.
ran over 2 hours.
We did good. Yeah, we did
Yeah.
good. It's no Mike and Bill, but
Yeah,
we did a good job for a retro episode.
we did. And I guess if you get it, well, you won't be able to see the con before here, but that would be a good thing to see. I wonder if they'll play any of them as like, can you watch something that has already been done?
I don't know. That's a great question. I'm not seeing that, but what I want to do, I noticed yesterday that when I was live streaming something, there was a button you could click to save for later. So when Kevin Smith starts in 15 minutes, I'm going to click save to later because I want to eat some lunch, and I'm going to jump in the shower, and then I'll try watching it later on and see if that works or not.
Yeah, that's what I gotta do. I gotta take Harley and then jump in the shower, cause
Yeah.
I woke up late. Usually I'm up at like 6 o'clock. Well, I woke up at like 4, read 2 issues of Top Dog, fell back asleep, got up at like 7:30, and didn't get to take Harley before we left. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a wonderful Sunday. Enjoy,
Well,
enjoy your
you
day.
enjoy your day off.
Yeah, we
Yeah.
definitely will. It's funny because you wouldn't think, we're just stuck at home that it would be a big deal to be off, but it still is really nice to be able to just get up when you want to get up, do things around the house whenever you want to do them,
Yeah.
because we don't have, like, the only there's not really a lot of positives to this whole situation, but the only one that I can think of is don't really have a whole lot of responsibilities at this point when it's not a day to go to work.
Yeah.
Like once a week, Stacy's still going to the grocery store, but she does that in the evening when there's not a lot of people there.
Yeah.
And other than that, we're just here. So it's like it actually is very kind of relaxing to have a couple of days. You can just do whatever you feel like
Well,
doing.
our life hasn't changed much because we're still going to work.
Right.
We usually go to Target on Sundays to shop, but because of my asthma, Barb's been saying, "Well, if you can limit your time, and I can take care of it."
Yeah.
And she'll go shopping on the days that she has more days off, so she'll go
Does
shop.
she go into work also then?
She goes into work, but
Yeah.
like last week, it was almost every day. I think she had Monday off, but she had to work every day. They're like doing a spattering of workers, so they like schedule it on Friday and say, "Oh, you're going to be here on these days doing these," and they don't want more than so many people in the lab.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so I think this week she only has to work 2 days, but
Wow.
last week she worked almost a full week.
Oh,
She
wow.
did probably work a full week, even though it was 4 days because of the hours. Some days were like 10 hours days, so.
Yeah.
Yep, so. Yeah, when she takes off, though, I want to take off.
Right.
And
Yeah, I know.
kind of in theory, it would be a good time for me to take off, but I got involved and I volunteered for two things, and now that I volunteered for two things, I don't have the time anymore.
Yeah.
I can, but I don't want to. I have a timeline now, so I got to worry about that.
Interesting. Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean you gotta you're busy regardless, so.
Yeah, but on the weekend, Saturday, we spend a lot of time away from home, but it's like 6 hours. Like we not too much. We go to a movie, we go out to eat, and maybe drive around a little bit, but it's 6 hours. And then on Sunday, I podcast, and then maybe podcast in the evening, and we go to Target, and that's
Yeah.
it. That's our lives on the weekend.
Yeah. Today, after we get out of the shower and stuff, we're just gonna take a ride up to in the Lake Ontario area. They have a lot of wineries. We're not gonna necessarily stop and stuff, but we're gonna drive. It's very like picturesque, so we're gonna go and just take a little drive with the kids
Are
and
you both working from home?
yeah.
Yeah. So you need to get away because you're at home at work. Like it's different when you're like working at home because you're at home. Like, do you know what I mean? You need to
100%.
get out.
Yeah, we're
Where
here all the time.
whereas me and Barb are getting out anyway because we
Yeah.
have to, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like I just need to leave the house.
Yeah, even
And
if you just drive around, yeah.
I don't need to get in close contact with a bunch of people. It'd be unsafe, but I just need to leave the house for a little bit.
Yep. All right, well, you have a good one, and
Thanks, you too.
we'll talk to you in a while. We gotta get coordinate another DC everything else at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
All right, sounds
All
good.
right, see ya.
Okay.
Bye.